This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Forever Dog.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
We kind of don't start like an official like, hey, welcome. And we can, but we don't. We normally just start the podcast. People, our listeners know that we just like,
you just
happen upon us. Like they just walked up to us and we're already in a conversation.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's so, I love it. but it's actually just happenstance that we do it that way because we're not very organized.
Right.
I'm going to wait to talk to you about your podcast till Veronica gets here because she's.
Sure.
Although she's late, she's very good at asking questions about things. And right now I'm just going to talk about how I cannot find a laundry basket that I like.
Oh, interesting. Do you like a lid or a no lid sort of laundry basket?
So we have a hamper in the room. We've got a downstairs laundry situation. So everything goes in the hamper, but my boyfriend does all the laundry. So he would like some sort of transfer of laundry receptacle.
Yeah,
and I am like, he's like, I'm just going to buy the cheapest one. And then I'm going, I only want a certain aesthetic inside my home.
Yeah, of course. Feng shui and all.
It is. That's where I've realized this is where
the problems are.
This laundry basket problem is actually we've come upon the place where it cannot be solved. Usually I can go on the internet and go, I can fix this problem where it's my feng shui, it's my aesthetic. Right. Plus, so let me just share my screen with you because I want you to show you. Oh,
yeah.
Gotta enable me, Skylar. He's very controlling.
Really?
He is so controlling.
He gave me a script of talking points too.
We ask him not to, and he does it
crazy.
Anyway. And I just, okay. Mm. So, and I'm going to share sound too, just in case. So this is the one I was looking at. It's
oh,
the
interesting. Like Classic. It
Scandinavia style round storage basket. Now look at this. Notice this. 2177. Okay.
Okay.
What about if you want the green one? Oh,
what
it's
happened?
$60. What I really want is I want one of those grid laundry baskets that comes in like a color, like maybe a pastel, like you had in the 80s and 90s.
Right.
Like just like Rubbermaid, whatever. Those things are called vintage laundry baskets. And let me just show you.
Okay. Let's see what that looks like.
What happens here? Go to eBay, for instance.
Okay.
And you see, these are not like, let's just go directly to eBay with this. Let's go to the source. You know what I'm saying?
Totally. Skip the middleman.
It's, I'm going to say plastic.
Vintage laundry.
Well,
okay.
Right? Okay.
Right. Oh, yeah.
So then you start to go retro Rubbermaid. This is what I want. Okay. Retro vintage Rubbermaid laundry basket. $34, 20 standard shipping. And Robert.
Yes.
Robbie, this is the best deal that I've seen.
Wow.
And look at this. This is the one I really want. Or this one. 1970s. Damn. Look at the shipping. $114 shipping.
Jeez. I gotta say, I've had a recent eBay you know, trauma. Some people might call it a trauma. Yeah, I got a Christmas gift for my son. He wanted a vintage film point-and-shoot camera.
I have inspiring story music. Let me just play it for you.
Yeah, this is... Okay, yeah, if it could be dramatic and tragic in some way.
Oops, that's too loud. Sorry. 1 second. Let me turn it way down. Okay, how about this? Does this feel good?
Yeah.
It's sort of like...
So there I was on eBay looking for the most important Christmas gift I could get. A point-and-shoot camera for my son. A Christmas gift, all right? Relationships are made and broken with these kind of choices. I find it, I order it. It says working condition on eBay. Order it, my son pulls it out, whips it out, some may say, and it doesn't work. It's broken.
On Christmas
It was lies,
Day.
It was fake news, it was all of those things, and... you know, I don't know how I can salvage this relationship with my son at this point. So I bought him another one from a store.
Has this ever happened to you? Oh, I can do it. Has this ever happened to you? No, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, that's
there's
really,
no reason.
That might be a little too dramatic.
There's no reason to have all of that.
Okay. Yeah.
That is
eBay.
Evil. EBay. Yeah. Do you think, because it was it a dis, was it a dysfunction that could have happened in shipping?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. Yeah.
Do you have to write the person and go, hey, by the way, this is for my son.
I know. Get a little personal investment or something in this. I mean, no.
We have to change your email to ihaveafamily.careaboutme.com, whatever.
Exactly.
Veronica's here.
It was
here,
a bummer.
And... so that means we get to introduce our guest, but I will end this vintage horror story segment real quick by just showing Robert, our guest today, the vintage 1960s Sulo floral laundry basket designed by Luigi Colani. $450 plastic laundry basket.
Wow. Wow.
So that's where we're at.
Hi.
Today's guest, you know him from working with me. Actually, that's where I know him from.
Yes.
And I'll say hi to you, Veronica, next, because you're late. So you're getting punished, which is what you like.
Wow.
Yeah,
I'm really getting to know Veronica quickly.
She loves a spank.
Yeah.
And
who doesn't, really?
But you probably, if you're listening to this show, are a Star Trek fan.
Veronica.
And therefore, you know him from... You can't clap in without being recording, Veronica.
I'm recording.
No, you're muted is what it is. Okay, you are recording. Okay, I'm sorry. You know what? Welcome,
Veronica.
Welcome, Veronica. Oh, wait, that's
great clap.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, really great clap. It was a little punishing. It was a little
I was just showing Alice what I really like.
Yes, exactly.
And that, you know, just to give you an inkling of what you're in for, but... Robbie Duncan McNeil is our guest today. You know him from, can you hear this clapter?
I do. Yeah, I hear the clapter.
There he is.
The clapter is.
You know him from his directorial debut. Not his debut, but one of his directorial debuts. This has been a lot, to be honest. Resident Alien coming out on January 27th.
Yes,
but you also
it
know
is.
Him from Star Trek Universe.
Oh my God, it's coming so soon. I'm so excited.
So soon.
He also played Tom Paris.
Tom Paris, yes.
On Deep Space Nine.
No, Voyager.
Voyager, sorry.
Or Voyager.
Wait,
there's been
you
so
also
many
on
Star Treks at this point.
Voyager.
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 Sorry, weren't you on Voyager?
Voyager. No,
Borgayer.
That's the new one coming out.
Borgayer is the French Quarter of the Borg.
Wait, I have a question for
I
you.
Star
are
Trek
you guys
Forager.
Really, are you guys really Star
Was
Trek
I?
Fans?
Yes.
Yeah, are
and
you
that
really?
That is a question we get a lot.
And next gen is your jam?
It's because we're so pretty.
One of the things that we like, our theories is that you don't have to know everything about Star Trek to be a Star Trek fan.
For instance, you don't have to know which series your guest was on. That's
exactly.
One thing you don't,
you don't
need
even
to know.
Have to know.
Or even anything about them. You just have to just be here.
I didn't watch, I haven't watched Voyager, all of Voyager yet. I've only seen... you know, the episodes I watched in syndication.
Yeah.
And then also when I do research for other Star Trek projects. So I'm, but we're getting to it because I've only watched like two seasons of Deep Space Nine. So because I'm kind of watching in order now. We've watched original series, which I had never watched before. Hated it. I'm a diehard, dyed-in-the-wool TNG person.
TNG is awesome. And I was on TNG, by the way. I did an episode of TNG.
Which episode?
The First Duty. I don't know what season it was.
Okay,
it was
we're
late.
Gonna find it right now.
The First Duty, D-U-T-Y. Sometimes they say The First Duty.
Look at Alice's face. Like a different thing. I feel like Alice's look. Like the way I feel in my heart right now is how Alice I look. Yeah. Looks. Yeah. Yeah. She's like, I am in your heart, TNG.
Because that episode rings a bell. So,
The First Duty, it was when Will Crusher came. He was going to graduate from Starfleet Academy.
You were in his class.
I was the bad guy in that.
That's right.
Oh my god. There's gotta
be. So you know Will Wheaton.
Yeah.
I am very upset right now.
Yeah. She's not as nice.
I feel very confused.
Yeah, there's us, right?
I remember you.
Oh my god. You're so handsome.
Did you guys do that episode yet? Did you talk about that one?
Oh my god,
you did. That was me. Here's the funny thing about it. That was a long time ago.
Right.
It was like 30 years ago. So I'm a little older. And now, I don't know if you guys do video or just audio on this, but like for people that have seen me, like
supposedly
seen
that
stuff, like I have a beard, I have glasses, I wear a baseball cap.
You turn into a different kind of snack.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
You turned from a jujube into some
Alice,
of a,
I want to be like you.
An oatmeal cream pie of or something.
Yes,
like that.
Exactly.
You know,
one
little Debbie to another. And
yeah, I look very different, so I don't get recognized a lot, and that's fine with me.
That's never going to happen to me. I'm like going to be the same. I look like a 12-year-old and I'm 39 and I'm going to just
will always look 12.
I was born 12.
Yeah.
She never looked a baby or a toddler. She was
looked a baby.
you just came out, bam, done.
Just plopped right out.
This is
crazy.
So exciting. I'm like flipping out a little bit.
So season 5, when did we do that? We'll have actually.
We did it a while ago.
Busy. If you're not busy, you could tell us when we released it because I'm going to be really mad at myself if I knew you because I would probably have known you when we did 519. Because if it was.
Yeah, probably.
Because we had started on episode, or we had started on the season at that point, and you didn't take over till after the pilot.
After the pilot, yeah.
You did so good in that episode. That was so great.
That was a good episode. Well, it was
a stressful episode.
It was the episode that that led to me doing Voyager for 7 years as a different character, Tom Paris, but very similar kind of character, like somebody who was kind of problematic and troubled and needed some redemption. Yeah, anyway.
The Alex Karev. The Carrie.
First Duty.
First Duty, yeah. Nick Locarno, the character on Next Gen, got in a lot of trouble. And then when they did Deep Space Nine, since you're talking about Deep Space Nine now, they talked about bringing that character, Nick Locarno, onto the space station in that show. They talked about him being one of the characters and that he would be like a freighter pilot or something because he couldn't be in Starfleet because he got in trouble in First Duty. And then they kind of rejected it. And so they had thought about it for Deep Space Nine. And then when Voyager came around a couple of years later with the first female captain, which is a big deal, you know, for the franchise and became, you know, groundbreaking for Star Trek in a lot of ways in 94 when we did that show. Anyway, when they were putting that cast together, they went back to the Nick Locarno character from Next Gen and they were like, maybe this is a place we could bring him on. And so they talked about it and they decided not to bring Nick Locarno as a character, but they liked what I had done in that one episode. They're like, hey, come audition for this different name, but basically the same guy.
We'll call you Lick Nicarno.
Lick Nick Paris. Yeah.
Lick Nick Paris.
Yeah.
And then it kind of evolved into just Tom. Yeah, it
sort of evolved.
Tom for short. How's that?
Tom. Let's go with Tom.
So you were Tom Paris. What were the Tom Paris episodes?
All of them.
All of them.
He was a series reg.
I was a series regular.
Oh my God, you were Joseph. It's true.
It's all of it. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't even know what she said.
I need to take a moment to like.
There was one episode. We did 172 episodes of Voyager. I think there was one that I didn't have a line in where I just sat on the bridge flying things around. But otherwise, yeah, I had. Yeah.
That's.
Of course, I know.
This is probably. This is our first time
having a real.
Besides, we had Frakes.
Oh, you did?
A momentary.
We did a little interview. Yeah.
Phone interview. But we have never had a guest in studio who was like in the pre-modern era.
I'm gonna cry.
Episodes. Because we're really fascinated, especially since you were on Next Gen, with like the process of making the episodes. Since we've watched and watched and rewatched.
Yeah.
It's fun to see and imagine your Brent Spiner coming in for a 2-second scene in the beginning of the day. And then as we know, as we make TV, it's like what that means is the person flew in, came in, they had a call time of 5.
Yeah.
Then they left by 3 p.m. and they were in Palm Springs for the weekend. You know, like.
Yeah. Well, that was the nice thing about the Star Trek shows, because of the ensemble cast. The only people that really worked pretty hard every episode were the captains. So Patrick on Next Gen or Kate Mulgrew on my show. But not always. In fact, the episode you guys had said, watch Inheritance, or you're talking about Inheritance, I think.
Yeah, we're talking about
Inheritance. Maybe. Yeah, it's funny. I watched a lot of it just to kind of check it out. And I noticed Patrick was not in that episode very much, like a couple of scenes. He had very little to do.
The scene that he is in the most is the funniest, because it's like the most obvious. We had to get Picard in this episode scene.
Right. Yeah.
That I maybe have never seen another more obvious insertion of Picard. So, Veronica, you watched the episode, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because it is Inheritance, which is actually, well, we had just covered Force of Nature, which was the previous episode, which is one of the worst episodes I've ever seen.
It was really bad.
Yeah, there's some stinkers. There's some Star Trek stinkers.
Some stinkers
for sure.
And clinkers.
I want to ask you about this. Because, you know, one of the things that happens with TNG is that we know when Patrick Stewart is, he's been always an amazing actor, but you can tell at this point, if you know him, when he's like, I don't want to say these fucking lines. I don't want to say these lines.
Yeah.
Did that happen a lot to you? And you're like
with Kate,
decent on set.
It didn't with Kate Mulgrew. It didn't.
Or with you,
that I'm aware of. It did. Well, okay. Here's my answer to that. I know on Next Gen, when they first started out, Patrick would get a script and he would call the writers and say, "I'm not doing this. It's bad. I don't want to. I'm not going to do it. Like, go back and rewrite it."
Me, so they had a me lot on Resident of Alien.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So he Patrick. Definitely wielded a lot of power. I think Patrick thought it was going to be a year and out. Like, oh, yep. I'm a Royal Shakespeare guy. I'm going to come over here and do this silly thing that's for syndication, and it's not going to go. And I just want to go back home and do King Lear, you know, at the Royal Shakespeare or something. So he didn't think it was going to last. So he kind of didn't care that first season. So from what I heard, that he was like, if it was not good, he would let them know. And I think by the time they got to our show, which was 7 or 9 years later, whatever, when we started doing our show, I think they had learned from that experience. And they right out of the gate said to us, you say every word on the page. You can't change a this or a that or anything. So they came at us a little combative, to be quite honest. Mm-hmm. So we were always very gun shy to like say, hey, this makes no sense. So there wasn't a lot of that on my show, but on Next Gen, there definitely was. I think that cast wielded a little more power in terms of dialogue and things like that.
From what I've watched of Voyager, it doesn't feel like you guys, maybe because I've watched later episodes, but it doesn't feel like you guys are like, it's not like a Woody Allen where it's like every, you have to hit every, you know, like the dialogue's casual. It's not like I don't know. It didn't seem like you guys were like poked into it. It felt like it very much to me has the same sort of rhythm as next gen episode.
Yeah, I think so. It was all the same writers.
It's the
all
pausing.
All the same?
It was all the same. The staff basically a little bit different, but very little. It's funny, as I was watching your episode Inheritance and looking at all the names in the credits, I'm like, oh my God. They were on our show and they were on our show and they're. Every writer, every producer.
Is the same person in charge of Forehead Aliens? Just like, look, I don't know what else to do. It's like, I guess it's like a pen. Maybe it's a pen that's here.
A stapler. Just let's add a stapler so that.
Oh, out of ideas.
They're just like a T vagina.
Yeah, that was Michael Westmore was the head of makeup. He did all the shows from Next Gen all the way through Enterprise, the last show of that.
I worked with someone. J.R. McKinnon, he worked in Strange Angel, and then he was like, I worked on TNG, and then he continued working on Star Trek, like, until now. Yeah. And it was really hard to work with him every time I had to work, because I was like, just trying not to be thirsty and ask him all the questions about the prosthetics and all the shit, because it's so fascinating how many things, like, how many foreheads you have to come up with.
Yes, being in prosthetics and on Inheritance, watching it, one thing that like totally shocked me when we got to Data in the holodeck with Sung, the scientist that created Data.
The old makeup?
Yeah, the old makeup, and Brent Spiner's playing that doctor, the creator. And all of this, I had to pause it and go, oh my God, they made Brent look like Rick Berman, who was the showrunner. He looked just like exactly. If you Google Rick Berman, the showrunner.
Oh, we're Googling.
Which, by the way, I was like, that's not an accident.
He's
like,
Dr. Sung!
Right? It's not an accident that Rick, the showrunner, said, I want the creator of Data to look like me. I make Brent up to look like me so I can sort of be like metaphorically the guy that created this show. Doesn't
I just
look-
sent the link.
It's Dr. Sung, right? Looks like Rick Berman.
What a dork. He really loved his job.
He was like, I created all of them.
That's
he was just like the actual Dr. Sung.
Yeah, like the hairstyle and everything, you know.
I was going to say that I have heard Picard or Patrick Stewart talk in interviews about this, the whole experience of going through like, you know, they said this was going to not last. They were like, no way it's going to season two for sure. And he's like, okay, so I'll sign this 7-year deal. And they're like, because you're not going to get stuck in it because nobody cares and this show's not going to happen. And then to watch Pat Stu come back to Star Trek at the end of the arc of his career is super touching because, you know, I love that lesson as a an actor myself and a person in this industry that like the thing you most resent, you know, the thing you're most like, oh, I can't believe I'm doing this, you know, like it's so beautiful that it ends up being the thing that he wants to return to in a lot of ways. And he's spoken about this, like he's just like the connections I made with a group of people who watched a television show, the connections people made with this character are just unlike, you know,
it's like,
this is the King Lear of our time. And like, I get to do this now. So there's no reason I should stop doing it. And
Alice has referenced King Lear one way or another in every episode since the quarantine begun.
I wrote King Lear during the quarantine. And then everybody's like, so does Shakespeare. And I was like, well, fuck.
It's funny you say that about like Patrick returning to his character, Picard, which I love that series, by the way, Picard, the first season.
Me too.
I watched. I loved it. And I'm sure you talked to Frakes. Did you talk to Frakes about returning
to
that?
No, we talked to him before it was at.
Oh.
Yeah, we talked him into
talk
it,
to,
actually.
Talk to him again, because he's got great stories about just how moving that was, and particularly one moment.
Oh, okay, let me pencil it in.
Yeah, talk to him again.
You thought we screamed when you said that you were on TNG. It was just us with a long, high-pitched tone the whole time.
Okay, sorry. Continue.
Yeah, Frakes was talking about this of returning back to something that maybe you minimized early in your life. And he said he and Patrick were sitting out on the dock. I don't know if you remember the scene when in Picard, when Patrick goes back to Deanna Troi and Riker's house in the cabin in the country. And And they have a moment where they take a walk. Picard and Riker take a walk and they go out on this dock or out by this pond or lake. And Frakes said, you know, for the wide shot, they had to take the camera way across the pond. And it was just Patrick and I out there by ourselves. There was nobody around. And he said, we just sat there and realized, like, here we are again, you know, 35 years later, whatever it is, mm-hmm. with so much of our lives behind us and so mm-hmm. much has changed. And yet this is still happening. Like this relationship of, mm-hmm. of our characters, of our friendship in real mm-hmm. life, of, he said it was just a moment where they both mm-hmm. really kind of teared up and said, here we are, look at us. We're, what a gift this show has been to us. And I am kind of in my, I'm 56 years old now. I started on that show in my 20s.
We have to end the episode now.
Yeah, we need to.
Nobody ever.
No oldies. But I'm starting to, with my own podcast that happened during this COVID time.
Oh yeah,
plug I'm it. Starting.
Well, let's talk about that in a separate, let's.
We'll talk about that in a separate thing. But with that process for me of kind of pausing a minute to kind of reflect on something that I definitely minimized back in the 90s as an actor, I was like, for me, when I got on Voyager, it was all about getting to direct because I'd been wanting to do that for a few years. And I was only 29 years old when I got on the show, but I was like, directing is what I want to do. And so that was my focus. And I walked away 7 years later. I didn't look back on that job, really. I was like, directing ambitions, and that was my focus. But now, 25 years since we made the pilot of that show, I'm able to sort of look back and go, God, what a gift. What a gift that, like, that show's still on the air today. Yeah. Voyager is still playing somewhere. Somebody's watching it. Like, what other job have I ever had that's still on the air? Zero. That's still on the air. So,
it was like, crazy. And it's not only a blessing, like, it's a, I'm getting very emotional with what you're saying, because it's,
I'm getting a more emotional.
It's giving us
slightly more emotional than her.
I'm telling you, it's giving us still, like, we've connected with a lot of people through our love for Star Trek, for the show, for TNG, for, you know, Voyager. Each fan is like, has a specific focus, and it's nice to see who likes what, which one of the shows. And, but either way, it's been like such a nice community of people. It's very diverse. It's like
very diverse.
The most, it's just all kinds of everything in this planet, and everyone's just like a teddy bear of like cuteness.
Veronica, the other day I was watching the video from the live show.
No.
That we did in person. And
yes.
Live shows used to happen.
I remember.
And we sang, it's the karaoke song for Gorn. And the whole audience is singing along.
Oh.
We made a song about Gorn, who is the
character. I'm already Gorn.
TOS. Based on the Natasha Imbruglia
Natalie.
Song, Torn, Natalie Imbruglia. So it's like, I'm already Gorn. I'm a lizard, you know, like.
And I'm a lizard face.
Just a big old lizard in a giant golden dress. Anyway, so like the whole audience is like singing along in chorus to this song, Gorn.
And everyone's just laughing. Here, everyone's just like, joy.
It was just I guess doing podcasts is not the same exact thing as like having the ability to tell these stories to a wider audience. But I think Star Trek being the linchpin really does, like, it makes so much sense to me that there's so much Star Trek fandom, and that the Star Trek fandom is so widespread and diverse because.
And soft.
It really is like the meaning of being like they made this show full of the hubris of like, let's make a show with no conflict that's just about humanity exploring the galaxy. And it's about the future in which a utopia exists and
morality and diplomacy.
And then through that experience, they started to create a show that was actually about the deeper meaning of like questioning, is it okay
questioning
to be
human
the way we're being human? And what does it mean for, you know, everything? What does everything mean all the time? And they succeeded in a lot of ways in doing it in a way that was super universal.
And beautiful.
I think what you said, like what it means to be human, it's something you just said like that, like looking at what it means to be human, I definitely feel like sci-fi, Star Trek in particular, in the kind of world that Roddenberry created or that has evolved, it's really evolved. It's not even his anymore. It's very, very much a cocktail of a lot of different inputs. But using Star Trek and science fiction as sort of a vehicle, like through characters like Data, to look at what it means to be human as a child of a mother and father in that story, Inheritance. Like, what does it mean to be a son of someone? And what does being loving really mean? Does it mean telling my android mother that she's not human? Does it mean, you know, there's so many ways that Star Trek and sci-fi can sort of get right down to the core of those questions and still, and do it in a way that's accessible for a lot of people, you know.
Isn't it funny that we have to, I'm going to respond to a few of the things that you said, but I just want to point out that it's kind of funny that we have to go all the way to space, like just get us out of our Earth daily context. And then that's when we can, like, once we're out of our motherland, I guess, we can tap into the core of us, because it's just like, an excellent device, because now we're like out there, you know. Now it's like something about that, about being in the edge. Yeah, that's like, okay, who are we then? Because now we're explorers of space. We're dealing with non-humans. We're dealing with phenomena that's like, you know, that's a magic to me of sci-fi. It's just taking all this. If everything was possible, then what's the center, the stick that, you know, holds it all together is humanity. That's what, I don't know. I think that's why it's so successful and why I'm such a sci-fi fan, not maybe in the term of like, I know everything, but I just like get sucked right into it consistently because of that. And then I wanted to point out something, because you said about the humanity of Data, and that's so, it's always so great when they explore humanity through Data specifically. Mm. And you said something that stood out to me, which is like, Data is loving in his action, even though he has no feeling. So there's something that says like, love can exist beyond feelings, beyond the sensation of a feeling, because that is a loving action. It's just what makes him ultimately very human. And that's very impressive. And then also this woman and being an artificial intelligence is so like, it's very intense. I mean, to me, it just feels very like quite a bomb to throw in the last 10 minutes of the episode. I was like, I want more. It was moving.
Star Trek, they definitely discovered it on Next Gen with the Data character, that kind of taking that point of view of the non-human character like Data, or even, I guess, on the original series, Spock, the non-human, non-feeling, you know, Spock was sort of a Data version, you know, a version of Data before Data, you know, that wasn't experiencing all the human stuff. And so for them to, almost in a childlike way, have to learn who humans are and what they're about is a great lesson for us. It's a great vehicle for us.
I'm laughing because I don't know if you know this, but our Levi auditioned to be Spock on the new.
Oh, he did?
I didn't think he got kind of close.
Wow.
Which, if you know Levi, is like, what the fuck? Like, obviously he's a wonderful actor and he could do it, but that character being so close to, I mean, I know Spock, you know, like I've watched the original series, I've watched the new series, like Spock is this specific, like, you know, like really attached to his Vulcanness and stuff. And just to imagine the, like, our neurotic Levi.
Yeah.
Being like, that's not logical. It's not logical. So, you know,
but how would you have played Spock, Alice?
I would have been like, I would have been like this, like, it's actually not logical. So.
I would have been like, yeah, we need that.
Yeah, the only thing that's logical is to do what I just said. But That's perfect. What I would do. But I thank you.
That's a really good spot.
Just like
so. Yeah, that's all you
need. Just like now.
Just holding. I wouldn't let them do makeup. I would just hold my own eyebrows. Like, okay, you done?
You know okay, what?
Here's what's actually logical. the Vulcan Valley girl is great. So there's the autistic community is very attached to data. Like the I think there was like this real attachment between like when Star Trek fandom of TNG sort of sprang about, there was like a lot of people who, I think there's writing about this. I'm sure that there's interviews, but like there was like a special subset of autistic and Asperger's, like autistic spectrum people who were like, Data is so great. Like Data is the perfect character for us to identify with because he has like this, he has a different kind of humanity. It's just that his humanity is like his curiosity and the way he like expresses himself is through these exploratory things. And he doesn't always understand people's like so-called like emotional reactions to things. And he's confused by them. And that's really something that, you know, like some people on the autistic spectrum share.
Mm.
And so he was kind of this hero in that way. And I also think it's like a credit to Spiner's portrayal. And then what else was I going to say? Oh God, you're a podcast. I want to talk about it too, but we also have to talk about this episode. So
I feel like you were talking about neurodiversity and Data, and I feel like I'm a little bit Venn diagram between Data and Riker.
Yes.
Because there's a part of me that it's good to see some a character like that that's a little bit more like a child and curious and also a little bit flat in his emotions, because I feel like that frequently, you know, like I'm just like, don't read sometimes. I read social cues and so I'm like half and half. I don't know how to explain it. So
I agree. Knowing
It's weird. So it's good to see a character like that be like accepted as a full human, treated as like as this emotional friend. Like I get emotional about you, Data, your friendship. And he is consistently showing love in his actions. So it's just like very healthy to have something like that, I feel, for just people. And and it doesn't feel like it's you know, it's kind of fantastic too that it started so early in the history of television, because so many shows are just catching up with Star Trek ideas. So many shows are catching up to the idea of like a mixed or well-rounded cast, you know, and Star Trek was never like two blacks, one Latino, you know, they were just, it just seemed like that was part of the world of this place. So it just was like a natural occurrence, which wasn't natural, not in the 60s and not in the 90s, the way it happened.
Not when Gene started. No, very, very unusual. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's ahead. It's ahead of all of television history, frankly.
So let's watch that scene. Let's preamble this episode real quick. It's called Inheritance, not The Inheritance. Come on, guys. And it is episode 10 of season 7. So on Federation planet Atreya 4, Data encounters a woman who claims to be his mother, the former wife of his creator. And in the beginning of the episode, they're all sitting around a conference table talking about how this Atreya 4 is like, oh, it's totally doomed because the planet's interior is going to cool. And we won't have the molten core that we need. We just love our molten core. Tremendous,
who doesn't?
Tremendous molten core. I don't want to normalize Trump impressions, but I think everybody loves the core, guys.
That was so casually good.
So Geordi's sitting there and he's like, well, I could shoot like a laser into the core.
I know.
Like, I'm like, I love this show because like, and any other, like, I was immediately like, okay, so they have to, like, decolonize and recolonize and go to a new place. And then Geordi's like, I kind of want to try to shoot a beam into the core. I'm just like, okay, wow, let's do it.
This is Geordi just, like, a top board.
Yeah, Geordi's, he's on, he had his new medication. It's great. His visor doesn't hurt anymore. He's fucking ready to go.
He's like, and shoot the core. Let's shoot the core.
Shoot the core. He's like, let's shoot the fucking core.
Which is like hairstyle this episode. His hairstyle is a little wet.
It's wet.
And it looks rad. So he's just like really... he's really sharp today.
He just comes in like they won't.
He's fresh.
The shot is him like he's just like shoot the fucking core, dude. He's just like
and he just slides by.
They're like, did these chairs always roll? Okay, so anyway, and then after the meeting that they're having with these colonized, the head of the colony or whatever, which is this weird couple.
They're always like a male-female asexual male, couple.
It's always like, are they brother, sister? What's going
asexual,
on?
Asexual, but like weirdly tense. Tense in like a gross way.
Yeah, because last episode there was like a brother and sister and they're like, we fuck.
They were like touching hands.
So the woman in the couple takes Data aside after and she's like, you don't remember me, do you? I'm your mom. And
imagine that just in like a store.
And because what struck me most, I think, is like mm-hmm. the meeting, the switch, the reveal, or the bait and switch at the beginning of the cold opening about this planet. And then at the end and her not looking at Data really at all. There's not a ton of look.
She was staring at him a little bit weirdly.
Oh, she
right
was
right up top.
I thought about that when I was rewatching it because I was going to go back and look and see like, how was she behaving? Cause she should have been like all about it.
She was like, I noticed right away that she was a little like, just
distracted.
Yeah. A little staring at him.
The bait and switch is like, oh, cause he's an android. And we've been through so many episodes where people see Data and they're like, yeah, anyway, we got this planet.
That's what I thought at first. I didn't remember this episode. So, I was like, oh, she's like gonna be weirded out about Data being real weird colored, you know.
It's like, uh-oh, we got a Karen. And she's like, call the Federation police.
He's got swamp green eyes. Like
space
a
Karen.
Space Karen. But she wasn't.
Her husband is kind of a space Karen though.
He was a hater for sure.
So yeah, go ahead.
She's like an amazing actress and she has the perfect eyes to be like,
yeah,
a little like suspiciously emotional, you know? She plays an amazing character in what's that, Nicole Kidman? The Others. The Others. She's the lead of the other lead of The Others. Yeah. And she's so good.
She's really good in that. I love that movie.
But I wanted to talk about the description in the Wikia page, because it says Data meets Juliana Tainer, former wife of Dr. Noonien Soong and Data's mother, quote unquote. But she holds a shocking secret that even she doesn't know she carries. I like it.
Yeah.
I'm just
very
like
provocative.
But also kind of dumb written. I don't know how to explain it, you know? All right.
And I appreciate the structure, the way this episode's structured, like it doesn't tease.
Yeah.
You know, it really doesn't tease. And like it, I have to say, great restraint on the writer's part, because there's a lot of episodes that you're just like, okay, great. You know, I know what it's going to be. But this episode didn't really tease that at all. It was just like, it was truly, you know, the reveal will jump to kind of what happens is that Data figures out that this lady who says that she knew Noonien Soong was a person maybe once. He doesn't figure that part out, but it's that she's not a person. She's an android. And he figures that out through things that only he would be able to tell, like blinking algorithms and her ability to do certain computations really fast, or her ability to
play the violin. Yeah.
The viola. Yeah. Really, like, exactly, like, it's like you're hearing the same song recorded, basically. Yeah. And he heard that, but like the human ear wouldn't be able to hear. And then that ends up being a thing that they figure out she doesn't even know. And so they're like, well, what do we do, guys? So I pulled the scene, this is just one of my favorite scenes ever, of like Picard. Oh, sorry. My cat has something to say about it, too. Did I interrupt you to make your point? You wanted to say something. Okay.
When Data discovers that she's an android, it's because they have to make a jump and she's like an old lady at this point still. And it's like a jump that I was like, wow, Midsommar. she was like, I don't know if I'll make the jump. And Data's like, sure you will. And then it was Midsommar, the longest.
I just got it.
It was the
Have you seen Midsommar?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so it was the longest shocking fall that Data just had an old lady do when he could easily carry her in his arms.
Well, he can't climb down, though.
Yeah.
Like, you're saying he should jump with her jump. Holding her?
Yeah.
But because he's an android, if she really was a human, he wouldn't have said jump. Because she would have, yeah.
Oh, you think he was like, you can do it, bitch.
Yeah, that was weird.
You're an android. Yeah. By the way, those
but you can do it.
Those caves were still around on my show. The same set in the same spot. They looked almost identical. So many shows in the cave set. What's that?
Were they like the break room?
Yeah, it was kind of like
cast holding,
like in regular non-shooting days.
There were a lot of cats on that stage. I think that was stage 16 at Paramount, and they had a whole side of the stage that was all cave tunnels, and then there was this open area with the two-story caves. And that's where they jumped off. I know exactly where they shot that.
I shot in stage
that's
5.
Incredible.
Did you ever shoot in stage 5?
I don't think so. At Paramount?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Okay.
But that was near stage 5. Yeah, because all the Star Trek stages were like 8, 9.
It was near, it's across from Edith Head costume.
Yeah.
It's not nice. Every time I entered Paramount to work, I was like, oh my God, Star Trek was a show. It must be here. It's crazy. I was just like a fan of Star Trek going to
Paramount's
work.
A classic. It's my favorite, like, old Hollywood lot.
I've never heard of it.
Okay. Well, you'll find out. Don't worry about it.
What you got there? Oh, look at that. Marina looks so beautiful.
I know.
Every makeup, she's just like, serves it.
She just pops.
We should do a bonus content tutorial of like Deanna makeup.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Concerned with what would be best for her.
But wouldn't she be better off knowing the truth, dealing with the reality of her existence?
I don't think so. She's believed she's human all her life. The truth might be devastating to her.
Data, there might come sometime in the future when she would find out anyway. Another accident, perhaps. Maybe it would be easier for her if she learned the truth from you.
No one's helping. Everyone's saying more things.
That if I were in her place, I would rather be told by my son than by some stranger.
I find I am having difficulty separating what would be best for her from what would be best for me.
What do you mean?
Perfect.
If she knew she were an android, we would have something to share. I would no longer be alone in the universe.
Oh. He feels alone in the universe.
I know how much that means to you, Data. But at the same time, by telling her, you're robbing her of the one thing you've wanted all your life. To be human.
Deanna, slay.
This is that, like, human predicament that he's got to learn about.
This part where he says...
Do what you think best, Data. But whatever decision you make, we will support it.
Now, I'm still a captain of a starship, right? Because, like, it's like, this part is so crazy because he's like... He literally goes, is there any accident where she could find out she's human? And it wouldn't be from you? And... Then Crusher's like, I mean, it'd be better if you told her. And then Picard's just sitting there in the room.
He doesn't have anything to add.
Listen, a big deal that you're
going
through.
It's a difficult choice.
It doesn't affect me or the rest of the crew.
And I actually need to pee.
At all.
Like, at all.
We don't really care.
The Federation. There's no, I care personally. I'll say that off the record. But the rest of this, like, I've got to go. Do you understand? I don't know why Riker's not here. Why am I here? Like, it's so insane that he's in that room for that conversation.
He's like, well, sorry for what you're going through.
Why? Where's Geordi? Geordi's like,
you will figure it out.
Shooting the core. Geordi's just like,
shooting the core.
Geordi's just like daydreaming of like, pew, 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 pew.
So, I do want to ask you before we have to wrap up about your show, because this was the reason eventually that I finally, I wanted you to do this show, and I love talking to you. And I know you were part of the Star Trek universe, but I didn't know until someone on our show told me that you had your own podcast, Delta Flyers. So
I do. There's my hat, the Delta Flyers. That's our show.
They have merch. Look how organized they are.
I know. Merch. They're not like us. It's okay. They love us just like this.
We had a merch once.
We had a merch once.
Merch is fun. That's one thing I will say about Star Trek fans. They love the merch. They love the cosplay stuff. They love the t-shirts of the different shows. Yeah.
And let me say, we autograph. Love it. Because we,
yes, we.
Exactly. I love it too. I still buy anything Star Trek related. I want an Elkar's phone.
Right? Yes.
I'm selective about it because I don't want to have objects in my house, but I'll still get something always. Like, why not? Like, how couldn't I?
We had a writer on Voyager named Brian Fuller, who's gone on to create some big shows and do his own thing. But Brian came on as a staff writer, a baby writer on Voyager, and he was a fan. I think he got the job because he was a Star Trek fan. And I remember his office when he first came on the show late in our run, or halfway through our run, let's say. He filled his office with his personal collection of merch, of toys. He had all kinds of collectibles from every sci-fi and horror show. It was just, his office was filled with collectibles and action figures and all that stuff.
That's
so
super cool.
Yeah, it's definitely part of the culture, I think.
Yeah.
It's like baseball fans that collect baseball cards, I guess. Yeah. You know, like you kind of get into like the games.
You surround yourself with it and it does make you feel less alone in the universe, as Data would say. And he's constantly saying.
I want to know more about Delta Flyers.
The podcast. Yeah. So we all kind of went into our quarantines back in March of 2020.
As we know, you guys remember that, right? You guys at home, in case you're just tuning in, that happened in 2020.
we joke on our podcast all the time about people who are just tuning in.
Just tuning in. That's right. Yeah. And Alice and I were working together on Resident Alien. We were just about to start the finale.
Lucky you.
The finale. And then, lucky me, and then we went into quarantine. And so about a few weeks into the quarantine, one of my fellow actors on Voyager, he had played Harry Kim. His name is Garrett Wong. And his character and my character were like brothers. We were like best friends and kind of the younger on the show. We were kind of the younger, buddies. Anyway, he called me and he said, hey, you know, I've always had this idea, but you're always busy. And I'd love to do like a rewatch where you and I rewatch the episodes from the beginning and we talk about our memories and maybe we could do a podcast during this pandemic time. And I was like, yeah, I don't know who's really interested in. I don't know. Like, yeah, there you go. Well, it really, like, we came up with a format and we came up with our plan and then we started doing it probably in May or something. And it's called The Delta Flyers. And we put out a free podcast on all the podcast platforms. Cool. We have a Patreon site where people can get bonus content or additional stuff if they want to become patrons. So there's all different levels there. We've got everything from people that just get a little extra long podcast to people who we call our admirals. Or our executive producers of the show.
That's amazing. We do
monthly, twice a month, we do Zoom meetings with these sponsors and fans to like get their feedback on the show.
Once a month?
I'm going to have to have this all cut out because
we have to cut this out. We definitely are.
We started this show 6 years ago.
Cut all this out.
And we have a Patreon and then we just throw things into it, but we don't like. We're just like, it's Patreon. I don't know. I guess
frankly, we just need like 2-3 more employees who have their mind on it. Because Alice and I are just not those people. Frankly,
that's totally what Garrett and I do. Garrett's the actor. We've got, my girlfriend / fiance now. I got engaged, Alice.
Congratulations.
Congratulations. I thought you were already engaged. Thank you.
What's that?
I thought you were already engaged.
No, we've just been dating for 6 years.
He just gives off that vibe. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
We, that gives us,
those
engaged
of us
New Year's
hope that
Eve.
Are dating that are dating for years and have not gotten engaged yet.
Who asked for the hand?
Who asked for the
I asked for the hand.
How did you do it?
How did I do it? It was New Year's Eve. It was going to be a road trip to Tofino, which is a beautiful place up here in Canada. But with the quarantine and COVID, we couldn't go anywhere. So I said, you know what? I'm going to plan New Year's Eve. I'm going to get some food. So we got like the whole New Year's meal from one of our favorite restaurants. And I said, I'm going to do it like a New Year's activity. Let's do a New Year's activity since we can't go anywhere. So I said, and I didn't tell her until after dinner. So I got these like Christmas tree ornaments that are just wooden ornaments that you can decorate yourself. And I said, you know, 2020 has been a tough year. 2021.
A crafty man.
I was like,
God, give us more.
We're going to start a whole new year. And here's what I want to do. Come up with 21 visions for the new year, 21 visions that we both want. And we'll take turns back and forth and we'll write it on a Christmas ornament so we can hang it up. And the next year we'll see how that turned out. So we go back and forth with like, I'm going to, you know, be more organized, or I'm going to whatever, you know, our visions. And we went back and forth and I had the last
next
one.
Next year's very depressing. Like you just achieved
I'm going to make less wooden ornaments. Well, this fucking sucked.
Yeah. She was like, oh Jesus, we got to do an activity. Oh my God.
You're that person. I'm usually that person. I'm like, let's do a journaling activity. And people are like, please, let's just break up.
So anyway, the last ornament, the 21st ornament I wrote, and I said, will you marry me? And then when I handed it to her, I got down on a knee and pulled the ring out, and it was beautiful. It was great. Oh. So now we have a souvenir that says, will you marry me? And it goes on the tree.
Okay, we have to make a...
Wait, we have sound effects for this.
Applause noise. Well, I have to now share screen set. So it's just, it really should get...
It's a lot. Like,
this is
a
congratulations.
Lot of things,
you know, I have two questions for you.
It's actually funny that it's much later.
One is, I just always wonder, you've been a serious regular who has to wear this outfit all the fucking time. And oh, that's not the sound effect.
That's the reaction that's of me getting it ready too late. Okay. Yeah.
So you've had to wear the uniform.
Wow. That was for my activity.
Yeah, that's
what we did. Oh, yeah, because it was like a preschool.
Yeah. Wow.
It's a perfect wow. Actual sound.
Happy birthday.
Is that good?
Yeah.
That was okay.
Maybe it's like,
I wish I knew how to quit you.
But you gotta marry me.
But you gotta marry me. Okay. That works. That's my favorite one.
Wait, so I have a question about that wearing the uniform for seven seasons, six seasons, you know, like those seasons were long. How was that to you as an actor? Was it like a little triggering to get back in?
Chafe?
On Voyager? Well, they were different uniforms, believe it or not, from Next Gen to Voyager. On Next Gen, they had this spandex material that was actually very stretchy. The bad part about the Next Gen outfit is it's sort of like, you know, like compression shirts or really tight stuff. It sort of shows every little bulge and wrinkle. So that was not fun. But they were comfortable on Next Gen. Yeah. The one on Voyager was made of wool, a very thin wool. It didn't stretch at all. And it was super hot. So, they both had their upsides and their downsides.
Well, the TNG ones, the new ones, once they refreshed them at some point in like season four, I want to say, they were like $3,000 each.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because they were like the material.
I don't know why they would make it out of a thin wool, because wool is so susceptible to moth and decay. It seems like a bad...
I may or may not have stolen two of my uniforms from the show.
That's pretty amazing.
May or may not have.
Okay, yeah. I'm assuming you didn't.
Yeah. No. Yeah, who would do that? No. Yeah. Who would take property... from a Star Trek show.
Property. Who
it would be, frankly, you would be the first actor to ever have taken property.
A costume that they wore.
Like if you're dumb enough to take, maybe if you're the props guy and you bring in a fruit basket that's like a real fruit and snack basket for a character who's in the hospital, maybe then. And that is a hypothetical situation.
It's just a hypothetical, kind of like that scene that we shot with Alice in the hospital.
I do want to say one thing, and everybody go listen to Delta Flyers.
Yes.
And see how it's done. All right. Just go see how it's done.
And come back to us and tweet at us.
And honestly, spank us.
And we'll maybe, yeah. I like
it. I did want to say to Robbie before we go, I want to say something else too. No. I have to say, you are so patient with me as an actor because I'm like blown away. I mean, you're a very good director, but you know, it's like I can tell that you are the person who you always wanted to direct. You know, you seem like that kind of a deliberate sort of, but also you're patient. You have this, like, I'm always walking into scenes, always. And I'm sure you've noticed this.
No, never.
I don't even know what you're going to say. And people are like doing their jobs. And I am like, maybe if you did it like this, like, I'm like, people don't even know I'm there. They're like, are you in today? And I'm just like, do it this way. I realized from watching you and working with you and this show, like, I probably should try eventually to do this. And I don't know if I'd be a good at it or not.
I think you definitely.
But I get into these situations and you always make me feel so comfortable and not shitty about it. So I thank you for your patience. And please, please, please know that at any moment when you're ever working with me again, you can always be like, Alice, this you can do this or whatever. Because Chris has gotten to the point where he does that with me. And I do need to be told sometimes. But I'll just walk in and be like, Robbie be like, okay, so for this next scene, I'm like, great. I'm glad you brought that up. For this next scene.
And you just have like a board already. Just like.
I got a Katie Porter whiteboard here.
Yeah, you have an assistant to help you.
I realize that I get it. Working with you, I'm like, I get it. I get why directing is fun.
It's very satisfying.
Yeah.
It's very satisfying to feel like you're helping sort of steer a ship. And some of the things when I know when I'm directing, some of the things I definitely have control over and some things I don't. That's been a great lesson for me. It's like to know, all right, let me let go for a minute. Let me just let go.
It's like sailing.
And watch it because it will go where it needs to go. Like the actors will find it. I don't have to try to control it too much. I can... You know, a support, really. That's my favorite thing about
holding
directing.
Space.
I get to be hold space and be supportive for people to do their best work. And it will find its way. You know,
that's
it always does.
Frankly, the best, because we're all sensitive artists and this industry is really hard. So having that kind of like you're describing right now is just like, it doesn't always happen that you're on set being like, I'll do whatever. And people are nice to you about it. Well, not whatever, but you know, there's places that feel very stiff and you need to be like, careful how you behave. And it's true that we need a little like of that breathing room to be artists and to be our own personalities and to be able to spend 16 hours on a set. We need to
be
a little bit.
I really would like to see. Stretched. What Eyes Wide Shut would be if you had directed it or something. Like just a different, you know what I mean? Like, you know, all right, I know it was a little rigid before. You had to keep a secret for a long time. But, you know, but I do feel like we're lucky to have you because it's so cool it is a tough industry.
Yeah, and it can be very tough.
You have the experience of somebody who's been on our side of the camera a lot. And you know what those pressures are on camera and off.
Mm-hmm.
And you come to this directing with understanding of that. And we, and I very much, and the rest of the cast that works on Resident Alien gets to like have that. And it makes it so much easier for us to do our jobs, but also to like, I don't know, get excited to come to work. And it's really cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah. This industry is too long. The hours are too long. And sometimes the rain and the weather and the conditions that we're in, like it can be miserable. Right. And so,
but also the like working and then not working and not, and it's, it, and a lot of our us actors and also I'm sure creators are like, our work is tied up in our self-worth completely.
Yeah.
And we all know that. And so that's why we get the divas and the people on set who freak out and stuff like that. And
and
that isn't what really goes on in Resident Alien because I think we just are so adulty.
Resident Alien's an awesome environment that started with Chris Sheridan and what he wrote down and created and who he cast and what he does on a daily basis on that show is really starts with him. But the culture is such a great culture, and it's
such a great
very
culture.
Hard to find.
Yeah, really I'm excited I'm so for happy. your guys' show, and yeah, I can't wait to see it. I'm so excited.
Yeah,
I want to tell you something. You know, I did watch Voyager like quite a few seasons, and I just like don't remember shit, but I know. And then now I'm like. My mind has been blown this entire episode that you're the same person that was in duty. What is it? The
first duty. Yeah.
First duty. Thank you. I was like one of duty. No, that doesn't make sense. English is my second language and I'm just like, forget it. And now I'm like, wow, you really did change. But there's a part of me that like now I'm seeing both your faces, like your face in TNG and your face in Voyager. And I'm like, I'm sure at some point in the back of my brain, I was like, who are these like similar actors they get in Star Trek? You know, like, and it just like fucks up with your brain because some actors do like 2-3 roles.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And so you feel like, is this an American style of person or is this, you know, like that confusion? Yeah. Yeah. And I just have this distinct feeling with you now that I know all this and I'm like, right. I just knew both these faces and they were similar.
Yeah. It's also funny, like on Next Gen, I feel like that character was someone who looked nice on the outside, but was kind of rotten on the inside. Like he turned out to be not a good guy. And I think on Voyager, it was almost the polar opposite. Yes. In the beginning, he looked like a jerk. And if you can bear with him over the course of the series, he actually turned into a really good guy by the end of the series.
Cary Agos. That's who I was thinking of before. Cary Agos on The Good Wife is a similar character. It's like the pretty boy, sort of privileged looking. My ex-husband used to call it somebody who looks like a senator's nephew.
Right.
The, you know,
I played those roles.
Yes. The guy who, and then, totally, and then you're like, okay, I know who this guy is. And then we just unravel the humanity of this person and also redeem them. And, you know, it's awesome, a trope that's been explored, but also I like it usually when it happens. And
yeah,
I think
it was really a great character.
It's
totally
a feeling.
And Cary Agos is one of my favorite characters on TV. So
we're not talking about Cary Agos. We're not talking about that other show.
Such as. She does. She makes a point.
Do you guys keep talking more? Because I do have to jump. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we'll pretend you're still here.
I'll just put a freeze frame.
Just do like a solid, a picture.
We'll pick some words that we already.
Very beautiful, Veronica, as well. You deserve $1 million.
We'll just pick words that you already said and edit something. Edit some content.
Do a deep fake.
We'll just make some quotes.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, of course. This was really fun.
Ah, you're the best.
This was so
Robbie.
Wonderful.
And listen to, please, I want to say Dark's pilots, but that's not.
The Delta Flyers.
Jesus. Yeah.
And watch for Star Trek Forager, which is about a truffles. So
yes, it's about
the Borgager.
And congrats on your engagement.
And my engagement. That's huge. That's the best news.
And congrats to both of you on Resident Alien. I can't wait to see
it. Thank you. Yes, awesome. January 27th. Tune in.
Woo. Woo.
All right. Thanks, guys. See ya.
Bye.
Bye.
Forever.
This has been a Forever Dog production, executive produced by Joe Cilio, Alex Ramsey, and Brett Boehm. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcast.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.